Hello and welcome. This is where we go over making peace with your gut. We're going to share with you some soothing strategies for optimizing your digestion. So I'm excited to have you here, making peace with your gut, soothing strategies for optimizing digestion. It seems like it's an epidemic that the gut isn't working properly. It's not digesting properly. It's irritated. It's inflamed. It's creating allergies. There's a whole lot of things that could go wrong with your gut. So what we're going to talk about are some strategies that you can use to basically make peace with your gut so that your gut is happy with what you're putting in. So before we begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that the information in the presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not intended as medical advice. It's a sharing of knowledge and information from my experience and all of the research that I've been doing and all of the people that I've been working with for a very long time. And I'm just sharing that with you. But if you have any diagnosed medical conditions, you just want to make sure that you run all this stuff by a qualified health professional that you're working with. So I always like to start with the basic anatomy. Those of you who have been on the cleanse before probably have this slide memorized. Those of you who haven't will appreciate that our digestive tract begins not in the stomach or the esophagus, but in your mind. What do I mean by that? Well, it's your thoughts and your state of relaxation or stress that will contribute to how well your body digests. And when you see food, smell food, you actually start to salivate. You actually start to produce stomach acid, and your bile starts to move along and get ready to be secreted. It's this whole reaction that comes from your mind. The other thing is that when you're in the state of stress, your body's producing a hormone called cortisol. And cortisol's job is to get you away from tigers. So one of the things it does when it's trying to get you away from the tiger is it shuts down your digestion. Because if you're hungry and you're trying to run away from a tiger and you pass an apple tree, it might look good. You may try to eat the apple and then you get eaten for lunch. So we want to eat in a state of relaxation. The body is meant to absorb and use the nutrients really well when you're in the state of relaxation. So it's possible that you need to change some of the way you eat and the how you eat, not just the what you eat. So for example, if you find that smoothies have always in the past given you this IBS, there's perhaps a fear that comes up when you're about to do it because you're fearing that the same thing's going to happen again. The next place is the mouth. And I will tell you this over and over again. Your stomach doesn't have teeth. Your large intestine doesn't have teeth. Your small intestine doesn't have teeth. The only place in your body that has teeth is, guess what, your mouth. Why is that important? Because it's important to have mechanical breakdown of the food before it gets into the stomach. And then from the stomach on down, we have what's called chemical breakdown of the food. We secrete enzymes that help to break it down. Next, we go to esophagus, which is a tube that goes from your mouth down to your stomach. And some people think that that's just a tube and everything just passes through. Well, it's not. It actually, there's some waves of contraction that will push the food down along it and into the stomach, right? So if you were to stand on your head, if you were to eat something and stand on your head and then swallow, it'd still go down. It wouldn't go down as efficiently. Gravity would start to pull it up. If you have reflux or what's called GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disorder, GERD, or you tend to get heartburn, you may be regurgitating and you may have a looseness of the valve at the bottom and it may come back up, but the esophagus generally will push things down. Next, food goes into the stomach, where the stomach produces acid that helps to break down that food and helps to break down the protein in the food. So it starts the protein digestion, a little bit of the rest of it, but mostly the protein digestion. Next, we go into the small intestine, where we have these awesome little secretions that come out from the liver and the pancreas to help to break down the food. So the liver produces bile, and the bile helps to emulsify the fats and make them easy to absorb. The pancreas secretes enzymes like lipase and amylase and protease to help break down the food. both of those secrete something called bicarbonate, because guess what's in the stomach? Acid. A very acid environment is required in the stomach to help break down the protein. In the beginning of the large intestine, where all these enzymes get secreted into in the duodenum, what happens is that it needs to be an alkaline environment. So it's like, quick, we got this whole big blob of food coming into us and it's all full of acid. Quick, let's put the fire out. So the pancreas and the gallbladder both secrete bicarbonate, which will neutralize it. You know, you've seen that people take bicarbonate kind of medications when they have acid, excess acid in their stomach. So that's the small intestine. In the upper part, the small intestine in the upper part does the digestion, the breakdown of the food into its little chemical constituents. And then it goes down into the lower part of the small intestine. It's actually called the jejunum, and that's where the absorptive surfaces are. And that's where all those little micro chemical components that have been broken down by the upper part, they get into the jejunum, and then they get absorbed, like slurp, suck them into the bloodstream. And then they can be routed to the rest of the body. We've mentioned the liver and the gallbladder already. The liver produces bile. The gallbladder secretes bile and it concentrates it. So the liver just goes about its merry way, producing bile. And then it gets put into the gallbladder. And the gallbladder hangs on to it and says, well, let me know when you need some. And through a series of hormones actually that happen in the digestive tract, the gallbladder that gets the signal, we have fat, we need to get some fat digestion going, and it squirts out the bile. The pancreas then is what squirts out the other digestive juices, the amylase, protease, cellulase, lipase, all these different enzymes that help to digest various parts of your food into their chemical constituents. And then finally, there's the large intestine. And the large intestine has multiple parts. The ascending colon is the part that's on the left-hand side of this picture. And then there's the transverse, which goes across. And then the descending, which is on the right-hand side. And then guess what? Once it's passed through the large intestine, it comes through the sigmoid colon down into the rectum, out through the anus, and into the toilet. Hopefully, make it in time. So basically, you've got this happening, and you've got upper part of the small intestine digests your food, lower part of the small intestine absorbs your food, and then all the waste, whatever's left over, gets put into the large intestine, and the large intestine has the job of pulling out whatever last bit of nutrients it can. It pulls out water and some minerals and concentrates the poop so you don't have diarrhea all the time, and then the rest of it makes its way out. So that, my dear friends, in a nutshell, is what's happening in your digestion. It's the basic anatomy of your digestion and the physiology of digestion, which is in this picture. This is a cute little cartoon version of it, right? You see the teeth, you see the whole thing, you see the little vials of different secretions in different colors that represents the pancreatic and the gallbladder secretions. And then you got the guy sitting on the bowl at the bottom waiting for it to come out. So I thought it was cute. So things can go wrong in your stomach. You can produce too much acid or not enough acid. Both of them lead to similar symptoms, which is a burning pain in your stomach. You can get a gallbladder. In your gallbladder, because it's concentrating all this bile, it can get sludgy and can form stones. And you may know some people who have had their gallbladder removed. You might be one of them because they formed stones. The liver actually makes all the bile. So it does that plus its great detoxification organ. So it's cleansing. You've got the pancreas. So what can go wrong there? Gallstones, we mentioned. What can go wrong with the liver? Well, if you eat too much fat or you don't have good fat digestion or you drink too much alcohol, you can end up with various conditions of the liver. You can end up with fatty liver, what's called steatorrhea, which is poor fat digestion. There's a whole bunch of things that can go wrong with the liver. In addition, you can have cirrhosis, which is after being alcoholic for a really long time, it gets enlarged and stiffened. So that's some of the stuff that can go wrong there. Some of the stuff that can go wrong in the small intestine is that you can have poor absorption. You may not be making enough pancreatic enzymes, which would then cause food to not get fully digested in the small intestine. And then it can cause holes to be poked in the villi. These little, it's like a carpet, a shag carpet that lines the small intestine in the absorptive surfaces. And various and sundry food particles, foods that you might be allergic to, foods that contain gluten, alcohol, caffeine, various things damage or blunt those little villi. Think of them as fingers, finger-like projections. And that each of those fingers has enormous absorptive capacity. So if you were to spread out the absorptive capacity of your small intestine, it would come out to be the size of a football field. So lots of stuff can go wrong. Leaky gut is a common one in the small intestine. SIBO is another one, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So these are some of the common things, malabsorption, that happen in the small intestine. In the large intestine, we already mentioned irritable bowel, you can get blockages. You can get diverticulitis. You see these little like balloony kind of outpouchings. You can get food particles that get stuck in there. And then you can get inflammation as a result. And that's a condition called diverticulitis. You can get something called Crohn's disease, which is an inflammatory bowel disease where there's ulcerations in various parts of your gut. You can get ulcerative colitis, which is, again, autoimmune like Crohn's, and it occurs usually in the descending colon, which is here on the right. So there's so many things that can go wrong, and this is not intended to be a course in what all the things that can go wrong are with digestion, but more an overview, and then we're going to talk about some ways that you can cause your gut to feel better. Transit time, the concept, you may hear this a bunch, it's the time it takes you to go from mouth to anus. What does that trip take? Should be 18 to 24 hours. If it's less, it means that it's going through too fast and you may not get full absorption of your food. If it's slow, you may be having these waste products sitting too long in your large intestine or not being passed from the small to the large intestine and causing bloating. So we need to be able to move things through in that length of time. Back in the day, Hippocrates once said that the citizens of Athens should pass large, bulky motions after every meal. So his take was similar to what mine is that if you're eating properly, under the right conditions, foods that agree with you, you're going to have a bowel movement within a half an hour of every meal, even unless it's a little snack. Okay? So you can test this using charcoal. This is more of how your intestine works. It is basically on the left-hand side is a good one. On the right-hand side is a damaged one, a little bit atrophied, white, no longer pink. And this one on the right side has these huge holes in between the cells. The one on the left has tighter junctions, so you're less likely to pass food particles into the intestine when they're not fully digested. And what contributes to this? Well, some prescription medications, ice cream, sugar, bread, processed food, processed meats, things like that, donuts can all contribute to the right side. And on the left side, the good, healthy one, you've got good foods that contribute, the fresh produce, the nuts and the seeds and organically raised anything. That's going to be helpful for that. And again, I hate to get too detailed, but people like to know about this stuff and always ask. So lining your small intestine is something called enterocytes. They're cells. They're large small intestine cells. And on top of each of those cells, they have a microvilli. And these microvilli are small, tiny, tiny, tiny. And they will allow certain chemicals to move through into the system. On this particular picture, what we're seeing, a problem with those enterocytes on the upper part in that they're passing, they're allowing the passage of undigested food in. Okay, so it's important to know this. Why? Because we're going to be talking about leaky gut in a moment. We're going to talk about how to heal your leaky gut, and I want you to be aware. So, damaged intestinal microvilli. Look at this. This is what it looks like, guys. You know, it should look nice and smooth. And when you see those little orangey things on it, this is when you look under a microscope at them, when somebody does a scan and takes a look, a doctor does a scan, this is kind of what it looks like. It's kind of raw and rough and irritated. And no wonder you might hurt when you eat food. Leaky gut. What is leaky gut after all? Leaky gut is when there's damage to the integrity of that shag carpet. There's spaces in between the shags that are allowing nutrients that are not fully digested, foods that are not fully digested, toxins to get into your bloodstream. There's some inflammation there. And this is a condition that you want to get under control. So how do you know if you even have leaky gut? Well, there's symptoms that occur in the gut that suggest it. And then there's other symptoms that occur somewhere else, other places. So in the gut, it might be like gas, bloating, constipation or diarrhea or both, pain. These are the symptoms that would occur in the gut. But like we said, there's symptoms that occur elsewhere because the small intestine isn't doing its job and it's allowing particles from these poorly digested foods to enter the bloodstream and your body rebels. So you can have neurologic disturbances like being aggressive, being depressed, anxious, confusion, brain fog, mood swings, nervousness, and poor memory. All of those things can be contributed. Respiratory troubles. Some people have shortness of breath, asthma, sinus congestion, airborne allergies. Hormone imbalance. You can have hormone imbalance doesn't just mean hot flash, guys. It doesn't just mean no sex drive or PMS. What hormone imbalances are related to are insulin resistance, is the management of your blood sugar, thyroid complaints, adrenal fatigue, menstrual disorders. And say what? You're wanting me to, you're hearing me say that you can get hormone imbalances from leaky gut? That the gut can have anything to do with hormones? And my answer is yep. It's very common. Now, other symptoms that you might get include poor immunity or even autoimmune conditions. A lot of times, a leaky gut contributes to an autoimmune condition like Hashimoto's thyroiditis, lupus, Crohn's. So it's really important to know this stuff and know what to do about it, which we're getting to. So other symptoms you might have if you have a leaky gut would be poor immunity, recurrent bladder infections. People think it's just their bladder and they go and they get all kinds of surgeries done to get rid of. It's not your bladder, not necessarily anyway. Recurrent vaginal yeast infections, skin infections, bedwetting, chronic joint pain, chronic muscle pain and fatigue. If you're suffering from any of these things, we want to help you. Okay, we know what it is. We know what leaky gut is in its generalities. We know how it looks in the body, how you can detect somebody who has it. But what are the top causes? Well, there are infection. You know, if there's toxins that are released by organisms that don't belong there, they're going to be toxins that can break down your own good tissue. Toxins, you know, goes without saying, all of these things can cause it. Now, does this mean you can never, ever, ever have any of these substances again? Personally, I think that would be a good idea, but for folks who don't want to go about that and be that extreme, it means that you can do that or you could choose to not. The toxins would be caffeine, alcohol, heavy metals like in your teeth, were a big one. In vaccines is another place where you get heavy metals, food additives and preservatives. So if you've got any of these in your diet, you know, think about getting rid of them to help your leaky gut. And like I said, once you've healed yourself, you may not have to be perfect all the time, but while you're healing yourself, it's a good idea to be as perfect as you possibly can be, barring adding to your stress level by trying to be too perfect. NSAIDs are drugs, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, that a lot of people take for joint pains. Ibuprofen is an NSAID. Tylenol is an NSAID. Aspirin, antibiotics, birth control pills, steroids, and measles vaccine have all been found to be causative factors in leaky gut. It's kind of interesting when one of the doctors researching, I forget what he was actually started out researching, it was gut stuff, and discovered that they were finding measles viruses in the gut. In the small intestine. Kind of scary. So what else can cause it? Well, diet, a lot of dietary indiscretions, eating under stress, not chewing your food, eating foods that you have a sensitivity to, eating foods that most people don't tolerate really well, like gluten and dairy and sugar, pancreatic insufficiency, not producing enough of those enzymes to break down the food, not chewing enough, and combining foods poorly for you. And you got to figure that out for yourself sometimes. We can give you guidelines, but it's mainly something you figure out. So let's talk about stress and the gut. And I love talking about this. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about because, first of all, when you secrete cortisol, cortisol causes the valves in the various places in your gut to shut down. So shut down, not good. Cortisol also causes an increase in blood sugar, and the blood sugar can then cause an increase in microorganism overgrowth. So stress affects in that way. Stress also affects by decreasing the amount of secretory IgA that's produced in the various mucous membranes in your body. And that's a protective antibody. And your gut needs to be protected, right? You're putting all this stuff from outside in, and sometimes it might be contaminated. The secretory IgA helps that. And when you're under stress, your secretory IgA levels go down dramatically compared to when you're not under stress. So let's just do a little pre-meal ritual that'll optimize digestion and your absorption. You want to do that? I want you to do something that I learned from the Institute of Heart Math. It's basically a combination of deep breathing and appreciation. Simple as appreciation. So finding things to appreciate in every moment of your life is awesome. So what you want to do is sit with your legs planted on the ground, your feet on the ground, or folded up under you if you're a yogi and you like to do lotus style position. And I want you to get comfortable. You can put your right hand over your heart, your left hand over your belly, and just breathe. Take a long, slow, deep breath in and out. And in and out. And while you're taking your next breath in, I want you to focus on your heart and breathe as if you're breathing right there into your heart. And on the next breath in, I want you to harness a feeling of complete appreciation. Maybe it just gave you something you wanted more than ever. Deep sense of appreciation. And on the next breath in, I'd like you to breathe in a memory of a person, place, or an event where you just felt great. You're on the top of your game. So be there with that memory. Be there totally. Allow yourself to feel it. Here's the good news, guys. Your nervous system doesn't know the difference between you actually being there and you remembering being there. It can bring up the same flood of neurochemistry and healing chemistry for your gut. All right, so when you're ready, come back into the room. I know it's easy to just kind of get sleepy with that and start to nod. Come back into the room. Now, I just gave you the longer version than what you would do at a pre-meal, and mainly because I'm just trying to sneak that in and allow you to do that and give yourself permission to do it. But you can do the short version of it, which could take you as much, as little as 2 minutes or 30 seconds. I can do it in 30 seconds because I've done it a lot. All right. So when you do this before your meals, when you stop, just stop. Whatever you're doing, stop. Don't continue to watch the news. Don't continue to talk to your friend. Don't continue to clean the kitchen. Just stop. Make meal time sacred. Look around. Look at the food. Look at the beauty. Look at where it came from. Look at who made it for you. And just tune into your heart. Just like we did, but a shortcut version. You can even put your hand there and just take one or two long, slow, deep breaths. Every time you put food in your body, this is the thing to do if you want to have good digestion. If you don't want to have good digestion, don't worry about it. All right. So I'm just going to come back to chewing, because chewing is one of the ways that you can help your body prevent leaky gut. Chewing, simple. Yeah, but do you do it, right? Chew. Oh, yeah, I'm going to chew really well. Done. Swallow. Right? The food isn't broken down. Even if this wasn't good for your gut, it's amazing for your taste buds. Because why do we eat more? We eat more because we like the way it tastes. But what if you could eat less and savor and have your taste buds stimulated for longer? That's what you get when you do some conscious eating, conscious chewing. You chew and allow it to just turn to pulp in your mouth and you're tasting it. Oh, wow. Beautiful. All right. So only your mouth has teeth. Unchewed food goes out the other end intact. Ever see that? Now we're getting a little graphic. You lose nutrient value when the food is not chewed because the absorptive surfaces are limited. If you have big chunks versus little chunks, your body's less likely to break it down efficiently and you don't get the nutrients. It starts the digestive process. There's specific enzymes that get produced in your mouth as long as you chew, but it's not a matter of chew, 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 and then swallow. It has to be chewed a little bit longer. Here's one that should hit you. When you don't chew your food properly, you get satiated, but you don't know you're satiated because you're still eating. So you tend to overeat more. Not chewing properly can irritate the valve between your esophagus and your stomach and cause reflux. Reflux meaning coming back up of the food that's in the digestive tract. Not chewing properly or poorly chewed food can lead to flatulence, indigestion, heartburn, gas, and irritable bowel. So we want to start. It all starts with what we just did on the previous slide, right? It starts with that pre-meal ritual to get your mind and your heart in the right place. Then it goes to chewing. And then you allow your body to do the job. As long as you've stayed away from foods that are going to hurt. And we've eliminated them on this cleanse. And this is a jump start to a whole life of healthy digestion. Yeah, you may have to do some more stuff after this cleanse. I'm not saying that this cleanse is going to cure you forever. A week is not going to undo 55 years of digestive system stress. But the foods that you eat during this cleanse, you can carry forward, or the foods you avoid. Nobody should be eating these foods. It damages your gut. It damages your liver. It damages your brain. Just let's move off of them. So the cleanse gives you like a jump start, like get rid of it all. Okay? It gives you this jump in, and maybe you can stay off of it, and maybe some of it will sneak back in. But make a decision that all of this stuff is going to go, and when you get off of the cleanse, even if you go back onto some of this, that you make a decision that you're going to stay off of one for the first week, and another one for the second, and another one for the third. But if you've got the willpower to do more, this is going to help you dramatically. Long term, this is going to allow your gut and your body to heal. So gluten's found in what? Breads and pastas and crackers, and most people eat way too much of it. Most people eat it for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, and some even wake up in the middle of the night and eat it because it's convenient, it's easy, and it's all around. Dairy, it sneaks into everything too. It sneaks into salad dressings. It sneaks into breads, even the gluten-free type of breads. It sneaks into everything. And dairy has got casein in it. Cow's milk dairy is high in casein. Casein is like glue. They actually make glue out of it. So casein is glue. And it gums up the intestine so you can't absorb your food, and it causes them to get damaged. sugars, and for some people, sugar alcohols, not all. Sugar alcohols are not really alcohol and they're not really sugar, but chemically they look like a sugar molecule with an alcohol molecule stuck on. And these are things like xylitol, sorbitol, and erythritol. Most people handle erythritol. A few people don't tolerate xylitol well, but a lot of people do. And sorbitol, most people just don't handle at all. So if you got something that has sorbitol in it, get it out of your system. Allergens. If you know that every time I eat eggplant, my tongue swells up. Well, you know what? So is your gut swelling up. So if you can tolerate, oh, I don't mind it. It just lasts for, you know, an hour, but it's worth it because I like the way that tastes. That's not a good approach because there's all these hidden things in your body that are swelling up. I know when people get off their allergens and they do like a water fast for 48 hours, they can drop a ton of weight. Not fat weight, but all this extra fluid that you're carrying, that looks like fat. It doesn't matter whether it is fat or not. It looks like it. It looks like you just have too much flesh. And sometimes it's just because you're bloated and gassy and you've got extra and lymphatic stuff that's swollen up to handle those allergens. Caffeine and alcohol, they actually blunt the villi. They actually flatten them out. In some people, lectins in things like grains and beans are not good. So getting off of grains and beans for some people is important. Some of these things are very individual. And certainly dairy has lectins as well as casein. Trans fats, what are those? Those are oxidized fats that are just wreak havoc with everything. They cause blood vessels to get damaged and inflamed. They cause the lining on your cells that do insulin, like that allow the insulin to go through. Insulin carries sugar into your blood. So the trans fats can damage those, the receptors. They can damage thyroid receptors. So your body can't pick up the thyroid, even if it's making plenty. Nightshades, we mentioned those earlier. If you tolerate nightshades, great. If you don't, you got to get rid of them. Not everything on here everybody needs to get rid of. But if you're having long-term struggles, I would do an elimination that takes out all of these things for a week and see how it goes. You can add them back in, but if you're feeling much better, you're not going to want to add them back in. So nightshades are things like tomatoes and potatoes and eggplant and peppers. And then processed meats. If you're going to eat meat, you want your meat to be organically raised and pastured and animals that are treated humanely. Otherwise, there's a lot of toxicity in them. Processed meats are things like hot dogs and salami and bologna and ham and all these, you know, turkey meat even that you get is usually processed. It's not just slices of turkey. So if you are going to do meat, make sure that it's organic. They weren't fed grain. That was GMO. You don't want to do that. You want them to be grass-fed. And if you can't get that, don't eat meat. A lot of people say, well, I'm vegetarian except when I go out. And I tell them, no, be vegetarian when you go out because the quality of the meat generally when you're out is really bad. If you want to eat meat, make sure you search it out from a reputable source. We go on elimination diet. We're doing that on the Green Cleanse, gluten, dairy, egg, peanut, soy, and corn. We're leaving those out, right? Anything you know you're allergic to. The things that you want to get rid of that damage your gut lining, that cause leaky gut, you want to get rid of these foods when you do an elimination diet. And we're kind of doing this during the cleanse, but you can carry it forward. When we do our gut repair program, basically, we take people through that elimination diet. We take people through that to help heal the gut. We go through a lot more detail and give you action steps and recipe guides and all this stuff to help you through this. But it's really important that you do an elimination diet if you want to heal your gut. There's something called the elimination provocation protocol where you identify anything suspicious and common allergens. You remove them from your diet for a while. It might be a week. It might be a month. You reintroduce in a very systematic manner at high dose to see if you tolerate. And then you play detective and see how you feel. Get rid of old symptoms or new symptoms as a result of that. And you really just do it for 2 to 3 days. So when you have a problem with leaky gut, I don't want to leave you with just gloom and doom about this is what it is. I want to leave you with a couple of things that you can do in addition to this cleanse. You might want to add some of this during the cleanse or after the cleanse. But it will warn you that if you have a condition called SIBO, some of these may not work for you because there's too much mucilage and it actually feeds some of the bad bacteria that are already living in your gut. So you may see some diets that eliminate some of these. It's a rare, I don't think everybody has to do those diets, but if you find that if you take slippery elm or marshmallow or licorice or aloe vera gel that you feel worse, then, or chia seeds even, you might have a problem with this mucilage and have to stay away from it for a little while, not a long term. Okay, they soothe the gut. They rebuild your layer of mucus. They're anti-inflammatory. They lubricate your digestive tract, and they nourish everything. And those are some listed on the slide. Chia, flax, licorice, marshmallow, slippery elm, comfrey, Irish moss, cinnamon, chamomile, fenugreek, jujube dates, aloe vera, plantain, calendula, and yarrow. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm going to say this for all of those of you who are like, I want to do it all. You don't want to do it all. I give you a long list because some of you may already have some of this stuff and you can start there. Some of you may have heard of it and you think it's interesting. And maybe there's some stuff you've always wanted to try. So now that I'm telling you it's good for soothing your gut, you're going to give it a try. But I wouldn't try to get every single thing on here and take it all together. It's just silly. Not going to work. So start with a few. Slippery elm is one of my favorites. I use it all the time. Licorice is one of my favorites too, but you got to be careful if you have high blood pressure. So these are just a list of herbs. We'll go through more detail on this in our gut repair program, but you've got this list and just try some of them. So foods and herbs that dry a condition called dampness in Chinese medicine can contribute to leaky gut. And there's a list of foods there and you have these in the slides. Probiotics. Super important to reinoculate your gut. You can do it with food like kimchi and sauerkraut and kefir and yogurt. And I like coconut yogurt, coconut kefir, cashew yogurt, sunflower seed yogurt, sesame seed yogurt. There's a lot of things you can make or buy these days. Kombucha, Rejuvelac, miso. But then also you can take supplements of probiotics. I like food. But sometimes, face it, you're in a hurry. You don't have time to make it or go to the store to buy it. You can take and protect your gut with the probiotics. And then I gave you a recipe that I put together that I love for gut healing porridge. Some people may have to leave out the prunes in here, but I added the prunes because they have some gut healing properties and they're also good for your bones. So this is a simple gut healing porridge if you want to do it. It increases what's called short chain fatty acids in your colon, and that helps to heal your gut. And it's basically chia seeds, psyllium, flax, some kind of nut milk, or it could be just water, and you blend it with prunes and some blueberries, and you blend that all together. You soak the chia, flax, and psyllium overnight or, you know, for a few hours in half of the nut milk, and then you add the remainder of the nut milk and serve. The reason I use nut milk is to make it creamy. If you're tending to have a problem with that, you can leave that out. And finally, continue your daily green drinks as part of a gut healing protocol for life. I've been doing green drinks, green smoothies, every day for 30 years. Now, there are a few days I may not get to it, like I'm traveling right now. So I couldn't get green smoothies, but I'm drinking green juice at the Whole Foods locally where I'm staying. I got this thing called Forager. They're not cheap, but they're good. And this is called avocado and greens, cucumber, celery, oranges. Uh-oh, I missed that. Yikes, I hope my blood sugar didn't go up from that. Avocado, spinach, lemon, olive oil, sea salt, turmeric, and cayenne. There's also another one I had yesterday that did not have oranges in it, so I bought like 3 or 4 juices to have. But I drink a green drink every day, and if I don't get a chance to make one fresh or get one at a store, I carry green powders with me, and I make it that way because this is the basis for gut-soothing chlorophyll, for magnesium, for all the minerals that your body needs to heal your gut. It's really nice for your gut mucosa and allows it to heal when you do blended foods. You give your body a break from eating, whether it's one meal a day, 3 meals once a week, or a whole week of it throughout the cleanse quarterly. So you work up to a quarter more daily. Now, during the cleanse, you're probably already doing a quarter more daily if you're doing a deeper standard. So make it work. And like I said, green juice, blended green drinks, soups, powdered green drinks, so many options. And this is a habit that you take forward with you. But every time you start to increase these smoothies, you start to aggravate your irritable bowel. Think, I need to give my lining a rest. It can't handle the fiber. So you go ahead and you just go to the cooked greens. Now, it could be that your bowel gets irritated because there's certain greens that don't agree with you. Maybe you don't do well with oxalates. Okay, maybe you need foods that are lower in histamines. So these are all fine tuning, and these are things we go into more detail. How do you know if you need this stuff during our gut repair program? But this is an overview, remember, and this is stuff I want you to take away from this, the rest of the cleanse and after, that you can heal your gut. It's up to you. Thank you very much.